Hello there, fellow book aficionados and just random people listening. Welcome to Literary Loitering, the Geek Show's podcast on all things books on the Geek Show Podcast Network.
Well, it's not just books.
That's
true. We do talk about art as well.
Sometimes we do.
Yes. We've got some art to talk about today.
Yes, we do.
I feel sorry for all of you that have seen that picture, and I want to express my sincere apologies for everyone. Once this picture does get posted of this,
it's already out in the world.
I feel sorry for everybody who does see this picture.
Do you know when you look at it, you just want to start scrubbing yourself and, you know, clawing off your skin and going unclean, unclean. maybe get one of those, you know, those robes with the hoods and the bell.
Yeah.
Just wander around going ding ding unclean.
It's just, in terms of satire, it kind of makes sense, but. It doesn't though,
because, you know, there was.
You guys were having this discussion before actually introducing the story.
That's a good point.
Yeah, okay.
Hi, welcome to Literary Loitering. We're professionals.
Yes. Okay, right. Over there is Owen. Over there is Andrew, who had an amazing adventure. Over there is Jordan, and I am Rob.
Yes, Rob.
Hello,
is there,
everybody.
In that position, right there.
Yes,
me,
I assumed
who has returned
the position.
After a long time.
Yes. So, yeah, we've got all sorts to talk about today. So, going to let Andrew take the lead
with,
on
with
things.
The most Tory-tastic sculpture ever made.
Yes.
So, the artist...
See, I would have kept this till last.
I'd have kept this till last. I'd have just, like, teased it all the way through.
Why would you want to tease that? Just get it over
should
and
we just,
because
we,
I haven't seen
no,
it, like,
should,
which means
should,
I can actually
treat,
have more fun with it.
Should we treat it like a really sticky plaster on a hairy place?
Yes.
Yeah, just rip it right off.
Yeah, let's do it that way, then.
Get rid of
okay,
it.
Okay, so, the artist Marcus Harvey... has basically made a sculpture for his new exhibition, and it's a good old Maggie Thatcher, you know, the Iron Lady, in just one of her nice, serious, respectable poses.
Okay.
Lounging naked, covered in pigs.
Hold on, I just need to fight back the vomit.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, you've already seen the picture, right? And I told you, right? Once you see the picture, you will never get out of your head.
Yes, once it's seen, it can never be unseen.
Yeah. See, even if you try to review
Jordan
it.
Has refused to look at this picture. And so Jordan is still innocent.
Yes. That's why for me tonight is going to be the night of much alcohol.
Oh, no.
That's no wonder anything.
See, I looked at it once. You know, Andrew has been forced to look at it a couple of times.
I'm still staring at it right now. Right. I can't click away.
But Owen went to look at it again.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay. I didn't look at it in terms of, okay, this is interesting. I wanted to try and understand it as a satire. The fact that Maggie Thatcher's there bathed in pigs, considering back in the day, pigs were what was thought of as bankers. You know, that was the way they were portrayed in satire.
Well, not really. Bankers have always been portrayed as fat cats. No. The pigs back in the day weren't the bankers.
Yeah, they were the popo.
Yes.
Okay,
the Rozzers.
Open up, it's the Rozzers.
Do you not remember
on The Young Ones when Neil became a police officer and went to the party? Open up, it's the pigs.
am I really the only one that's like kind of seen these sort of satirical images of like a pig in a suit with a cigar, top hat, bag of money?
Yes, because that was normally a cat.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I've seen it as pigs, unless I'm thinking of American stuff.
Because it always used to have dollar signs in the eyes.
Yeah. It was normally a cat.
It was always a cat.
Right. Because I'm pretty sure I've seen it as a pig as well.
You probably have seen it as a pig. But, you know, generally,
I know that that's that. And I also know that pigs was the sort of derogatory term for police, but.
But, I mean, obviously this is a reference to the David Cameron stuff.
Actually, no, it isn't. Apparently.
Is it not?
No, apparently this was made before that came out.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my God. Talk
so this
about
is
prescient.
Just a happy coincidence. Especially considering one of the pig snouts is right in the special place.
Oh.
Yeah.
Jordan, it doesn't matter whether you see it now.
It's
your
there.
Your instance is gone.
It's imprinted in your mind.
No, unlike you, right? I can actually play this safe, right, and actually be able to delete every single image from my head.
Oh, I can delete stuff from my head.
No, you can't.
I can.
You say that, right? However, you looked at this picture twice, right?
It's in long-term storage now.
It is. even though you say it, right?
Well, you might be aimlessly, you know, maybe just making a sandwich.
That includes ham.
That includes ham. And it'll just go, bam, right there in front of you. You go, no, my eyes, no, my mind.
Oh, God. What if we ruined bacon?
Even that can't ruin
that,
bacon.
That means I will kill you if we have ruined bacon.
No, no, no. Remember what I said earlier when Owen came into the office?
Oh, no.
And we didn't even know about this story.
I missed this.
Right?
We joked about Owen thinking about us while he ate his bacon sandwich.
No, no. Remember what I said. Beautiful woman lying on a bed of money.
No, no.
Stop. Please stop.
No,
please stop.
We didn't even know about this story when I made that comment.
Fair enough.
Makes it even worse. It's like, because up till now, I've just been distracted by the pigs, but noticing Maggie's upper half, that they've been somewhat overgenerous, I think.
Morgan Spurlock's been at that. Supersize me.
The first time I only saw the pigs, I didn't even see the upper half. That's why I went, I'm not even going to.
No,
I didn't even want to see it anyway.
Just stop now. I think we should leave this story before we degenerate even more.
Yes, please.
How can we?
Because I would like to reiterate that all the time
Grace.
We've been talking about this, I've kept
the
story open.
You really want to.
It's right there in front of me.
I don't think we can.
You can close it now.
X. Oh.
Anyway, what's the next story?
Oh, am I just running through
Wrinkly
all the
Henning Mankell.
Yes, Wrinkly Henning Mankell. His memoir of sorts is due out next year. So it's called Quicksand, and it's described as an autobiographical essay about what it means to be human.
I don't understand. It's called Quicksand, and it's an essay about what it means to be human.
Yes, because quicksand is the most human of all elements.
Because you fall into it and slowly sink, and if you move,
and if you move and struggle,
you sink quicker.
Yeah, just like a relationship, am I right? I don't know. I'm so alone.
Well.
Yes. I'm not sure how to respond to that, Andrew.
There's no response.
And which part of that?
The so alone bit.
All right.
Anyway.
Perhaps we'd like to take out some kind of tiny violin.
Was that a euphemism? Are you calling me little? You've never seen me.
Welcome to the Perverted Show.
I don't feel bad about being alone now.
Anyway, Henning Mankell, Quicksand. So why is it...
Well, hang on, what's his name?
Henning Mankell.
Yeah.
How drunk must your parents have been to come up with a name like that?
Oh, how Scandinavian.
John, you're racist.
Both.
There's not much to do on those long winter nights. And the winter nights in the North Pole are long. The last, 6 months, was it? Mm. Anyway, yes. So, Henning Mankell and the human condition.
Yep. He's got a bunch of stuff he wrote before he died.
Okay. So, does it give any examples of what quicksand is then? Is there any quotes or anything like that?
Yes. Which...
Judging by that, right, is going to make this
The problem
more
is, you're assuming that the quotes themselves are going to in any way help us understand what this is.
They may do.
Well, okay, going to one quote from Henning Mankell, it's about jealousy, ice ages, past and present, and the future of our planet.
What?
He was right about one thing.
It's not helping us. Any other quotes that might be able to help us?
Okay, there's one, I think. Maybe brings it more in line to what it's actually about is it's about love and jealousy, courage and fear, and about what it's like to live with a potentially fatal illness.
Okay, that one does make more sense.
Yeah.
I think if this is one of those things that we have to sit down and read first before we actually get a full handle on it. But it's Henning Mankell. Do I really want to sit down and read Henning Mankell? Don't really like Henning Mankell.
More importantly, do you want to sit down right and just read an essay?
I don't mind reading essays. There are some really interesting essays. I've read sorts of essays. There's interesting essays on all sorts of things, but it's Henning Mankell. It's kind of tedious. Sorry, Henning, wherever you are.
Love your reading.
Great, I've got to add the ghost of Henning Mangel to the list.
Yes, the ghost of Henning Mangel. I'm going to get... thing is, because nothing supernatural ever happens to me, there's going to be Henning Mangel like 100 paces away going, I would haunt you, but you have this weird cosmic stink, so I'm not going to get anywhere closer.
Beat the paranormal activity.
Yes. Yeah, if they had me in that, it'd be like, I'd just be lying on the bed going...
Right, you say that like that wouldn't be at least as riveting as 2 hours of, oh, look, a picture slightly moved. A chair fell over.
Yes.
Spooky.
I managed to make that snore go on for about 10
you
seconds.
Did. That was impressive.
That could have just been our show.
Just me doing that.
Hey, so speaking of things that are intensely horrifying, H.P. Lovecraft.
Okay.
So there's been quite a bit of fuss raised up over the fact that the World Fantasy Awards will no longer use his likeness in their prize.
Why?
Well, on account of him being colossally racist.
I thought you were going to say something else completely different there when you said that bit.
Okay, yeah, so he's colossally racist, but that was an established fact and has been for a long time.
Yeah, but I feel like now that more kind of Black and Asian artists are getting accepted into these things, there's kind of been a growing movement kind of saying, hey, actually, we don't want our prize to be like just the giant head of a man who hated us for the color of our skin.
Okay, that I can understand. But the question then that I've got is, who are they replacing it with?
I don't know. We just know that they're
Are they just going to do one of those generic kind of, oh, it's the World Fantasy World. So here is a statue of a globe with a circle around it, you know, like the Hugo or the Nebula, which is like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's go with a generic world statue, you know, and maybe put a dragon on top, so you know it's fantasy.
That's hard now. There's a bunch of people.
Actually, that'd be a really cool one.
Yeah, that's really cool.
I'm just thinking about it mentally, and like, you know, a trophy of like a globe with a dragon sitting on top. I'd like one of those.
That is one big dragon.
Yeah,
But wouldn't you like that as a trophy on your shelf?
I'd love that as a trophy.
Basically,
yeah.
Just be sitting there on your shelf. You're like, look at it and go, yeah, that's fine.
The golden globe.
It's got a dragon as well.
Just, I think I would also like that a lot more than like giant Easter Island head of bug-eyed H.P. Lovecraft. Because that's what the current award is.
What? Seriously?
Yeah, it looks like one of the Easter Island heads, but like just with gigantic H.P. Lovecraft eyes.
It genuinely does. Do you remember?
Oh God, yes.
Do you remember watching Art Attack? Right? Do you remember the head on that?
Holy
God! Yes,
it's the head from Art Attack.
Oh my God, does that mean the head from Art Attack was racist?
Yes.
Oh,
what? Didn't you realize?
Right in the childhood.
It hurts, doesn't it?
Childhood's completely destroyed.
Oh
and
that God!
Fire there.
Do you know the weird thing?
Remnants of it.
Do you know the weird thing? I know that they've made an attempt at like an Easter Island head, but there's something weirdly African about this head.
It kind of is. Oh, look, that is ironic.
It is, isn't it? There's something weirdly African about the head.
It looks like something from Spitting Image.
Yes, it does.
It's the Art Attack head crossed with Spitting Image.
Yes.
That's what it is.
I'm going to be horribly racist now. You're going to like it. I'm assuming that's what H.P. Lovecraft sounded like.
We'll never know.
Yes, because he was like a heavy smoker, maybe. Who knows?
Yes. Shall we move on from one giant head to another giant head? But this one looks like a hobo.
I think, why let us do that?
This one, I've got to say, he looks more and more like a guy who lives in a cardboard box every time I see him.
We're of course talking. about Alan Moore.
Wow, Brian Blessed's removed brother.
Brian Blessed's brother, who's fallen on a bit of hard times.
Seriously though, he does look like he's homeless, doesn't he?
It does look it. I mean,
can you imagine if Santa Claus looked like that? You wouldn't.
You wouldn't want.
Oh,
to
I would
Jimmy.
Not. Yeah, I wouldn't go near that grotto.
Wow.
I've got to high five that. I know it was unintentional, but it was brilliant. Oh, yeah, I don't think any of us wanted to go near that grotto.
He kind of looks like the one that even the parents wouldn't allow their kids to sit on his lap.
I don't want to know where that candy cane's been. I managed to get Jordan.
Wow.
Oh, it's Christmas. Anyway.
That even worse.
That actually could have been a lot worse.
I know.
There's one word that would have just made everything so much worse in that sentence.
Are we talking about the star on the tree?
No, just when you say it's Christmas, there's one word that could have gone in the middle of, which would just made everything so much worse.
But yes, it's Christmas, and in the spirit of giving, Alan Moore has donated £10,000 to help a friend bring his African wife to the UK.
Okay. Well, that's very generous of him.
Yeah, he's made a public donation to help Graham Cousin, whose wife was deported back to Africa after they failed to meet the minimum household income.
Okay. So how does he know Graham Cousins?
Apparently they're just their friends from somewhere. How does Alan Moore know anyone? Probably through some sort of dark occult ritual.
Well, he has been touted as being a space wizard. Oh my God, I've just realised this is what Harry Potter's going to look like when he grows up.
No, Ron Weasley.
No, it's definitely Harry. It's definitely Harry.
Mind you, it looks a bit like Hagrid.
Yeah, well, that's why I said it's definitely Harry, because, you know, Harry always looked at Hagrid with a lot of affection, and Dumbledore as well. This is kind of a weird cross between the two of them.
That is a thought that you really do not want inside your head.
Who are the two men I respect most in the world? I want to be like them. Hagrid and Dumbledore. I want to look like them. I want to wear robes like they do. I'm going to be a space wizard.
Actually, it's kind of ironic. Cause, like, I saw a picture of Daniel Radcliffe in like his newest film, and he's completely bald.
Wow. Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Thanks for ruining Harry Potter for all of us.
It's ruined. It's over.
Well, if you want to go any worse, if you want to make it worse, just watch Game Changers. That'll ruin everything for you.
Yeah, he does not suit a beard, does he?
No.
he does
it
was, not.
It just looked like somebody had taken bits of carpet and stuck it to his face. I was like, is that Daniel Radcliffe? Really? Really?
I never heard Harry Potter swear so much in my life.
Yeah, although Harry Potter would have been much more fun if Harry did actually swear.
Yeah.
Yes.
How can you imagine walking up to that giant chess set in the Philosopher's Stone and going, what the p- is this?
Yeah.
Are you having a laugh?
just in the final battle. Well, you, Voldemort.
No. Ron on the night going, you know, have this, mother.
Yeah.
Wow, that would have just improved everything.
How much cooler would Harry Potter have been?
Exactly.
Go on, guys. It's the final fight with Voldemort. Let's F him right up.
Oh, God. I've just realized how to improve Harry Potter is do a reboot, but do it in the style of The Expendables. So you have...
So it's a gas the ex-Dumbledore.
So it'll be like the expendable Harry Potter. And instead of having like kids in the lead roles, you've got like Arnold and Sylvester and Bruce Willis. I don't know which one of them is Hermione, but
John Voight as Draco Malfoy.
Yeah, and you got J.K. Simmons, as like Dumbledore. J.K. Simmons reprising his role from what was the one with the music?
Oh, Whiplash.
Whiplash, yeah. Yes. Reprising his role from Whiplash, but playing Dumbledore. You know, so Dumbledore is really intense instead.
That could be really, really cool.
Exactly.
Who would you have as Hagrid?
Who would you have as Hagrid? Hagrid could just stay as Robbie Coltrane.
All right, I like that.
Because Robbie Coltrane is cool enough to just exist in that world.
You know, but just make Robbie Coltrane, instead of playing the bumbling fool, he reprises his role from Cracker instead.
Yes. I definitely...
So Robbie Coltrane is going around as Hagrid, psychoanalyzing everybody.
Oh, I definitely remember my favorite Robbie Coltrane quote from Harry Potter. Must have been the first one. There's Dursley there with shotgun. It's like, dry up, Dursley, great prune. Gun goes off. It's hilarious.
See, when you said
I don't remember
first...
that from the first Harry Potter.
It was from the first Harry Potter film.
Was it?
Yeah, it's when Harry's getting all the letters.
Finally meets Harry,
yes,
they give him
yes,
go
yes,
somewhere
yes.
else.
Yes. Right, okay. Because when you said the first quote, I was thinking, wasn't that just him banging on the door and then going, hello?
No, it was, sorry about that.
No, sorry about that. That's the one, yeah.
Well, it's not Hagrid's first quote, right? It's when he's delivering the baby on the motorcycle.
That's true.
Oh, right, yeah.
But because I didn't say first quote, I said favourite quote.
It
sounded like you said first, that's all. That's right. But anyway, back to Alan Moore. I don't know how we ended
Hagrid's
up on...
At least it ended with Hagrid then going back to Alan Moore, so we didn't diverge too much.
No, we didn't. We went full circle. So, back to Alan Moore. So, he's donated £10,000.
Yeah, to help bring his friend's income up so that he can hopefully bring his wife back. But apparently the government are also saying that money needs to be in his account for at least 6 months before they can bring her back.
Okay. Well... I'm not sure what to say about this. It's a generous donation, and I applaud it, but he is helping somebody. But I don't know. Is this the kind of thing that you'd make public?
Nah.
It just seems like it's more, even though it's very, very generous, making it public, it just seems like it's just become a publicity stunt.
You could have just given him the money.
Yeah. I mean, the morality there is, there's some great morality to it, but making it public, it's just, look what I do.
To be fair, it could be more, Alan Moore, he's not the kind of guy who like courts publicity. So no, I think this might more be
like a wake
trying
up
to point out sort of like the problems with our immigration policy.
No, that's very true. That's very true. It's the idea. If you don't make enough money, sorry, we're kicking you out.
Well, the thing is, that's actually been pointed out quite recently. There was news reports on BBC, I think yesterday or the day before. They were talking about students from India and the fact that when they come to the UK, in other countries, other developed nations where Indian students go to study and do a degree, after their degree, they're given at least a year, maybe 2 years, sometimes even three, in Canada it's 3 years, to basically find a job and work and get experience in whatever degree it is that they've done. But here in the UK, they're only given 4 months.
Now,
I find that appalling because they're going back home, and in those 4 months, they're not going to be able to find a job because in the field that they want to work in, because this is a process that takes time.
Yeah.
And there are very few jobs going around at the moment, regardless of what the government says. So you've got David Cameron, or Big Shiny Face, as I call him, going across to India, and you've got George Osborne going, yes, we want all the Indian students to come here. Give us your money for our overpriced overseas education. And the Indian students are going, well, what's in it for us? You know, so the government actually takes a long, hard look at this and really knuckles down and reworks the entirety of the immigration policy, or it's going to cause problems further down the line. There are certain necessities for immigration. We do understand that. But what's happened is you've got the tabloid press has overblown this whole idea of immigration, and people automatically assume it's to do with Asian people and people from the Far East and people from Africa, when it's not, because there are so many restrictions placed on people from the Far East and the Indian subcontinent and from Africa on coming to the UK. So many restrictions that very few of them actually come.
Aye.
Yeah, well, I think it's to combat this fictional idea we have of like this wave of people from like India and Eastern Europe.
Do you remember when
flooding
Romania
in and like taking all our jobs and like, or not working for any money and stuff like that, even though it's like, it's completely made up.
It is. Do you remember when when everybody was saying, oh, there's going to be 100,000 Romanians coming to the UK?
Yeah. I remember because like BBC were like at the airport and then like one guy
came. And that was it for like 3 weeks or something like that. Yeah. It was just this one Romanian guy who decided he was going to come to England to live and work here.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. But you're right about the tabloids, like you've just blown everything about proportion, but they just do it all the time. I mean, we've got an Australian who lives in America, he's a multimillionaire, multi-billionaire, who lives in America, who influences our politics, who influences what we think.
You on about, yeah.
Yeah, him.
Yeah, he who shall not be named.
The most evil, one of the most evil people in this world.
I'm doing another Harry Potter reference.
Yeah.
Did you not notice?
No, I noticed. He is just...
We shall call him Tom Riddle. The Dark Lord.
Surely.
Or the Emperor.
Could be, yeah, we could just call him Bob.
It's Rupert Murdoch, right? We're talking about Rupert
yes,
Murdoch.
Yes, we are. Yes. Oh, no, he named him.
No.
Now he will appear in our midst and strike us down.
No, it's
with
fine. I still have to say his name like two more times.
Yeah, oh, God, yeah, he is like Beetlejuice, isn't he?
Yes.
It's probably safe to call Beetlejuice as well. Because then he could sit down and have lunch with Michael Keaton.
God. Although you said his name twice there.
Yes. Anyway, shall we move on?
Yes. Shall I take the next one?
What's the next one?
The Origins of the Species.
Yeah?
Yep. Yeah. We know the truth. We know what it is. Nah, not really. The book, The Origin of the Species, has been voted the most influential book, was it, of the last century? Or just of all time?
I think just foreverzies.
Foreverzies. So that makes it more influential than the Bible and the Quran and...
Well, like the most influential academic book.
All right, well, there we go.
Okay, I was going to say, I doubt it's more influential than the Bible, which has been around for a lot longer.
And has influenced so many different wars and crusades.
Well, think about it like this. The Bible has influenced the legal system in every Christian nation.
Yep.
Just like the Quran has influenced the legal system in every Islamic nation.
Yep.
So, yeah. Weirdly enough, it was a while ago, I think it was in the 1930s, the US Supreme Court basically announced that the Prophet Muhammad was one of the greatest lawgivers in history.
Mm-hmm. This is 30s America.
This is 1930s America.
Wow.
And I'm like, okay, it's ironic how times change.
That's just...
And now everyone's going, no, we must, you know, Sharia law is really cruel. You're like, you do realize, like, 80 years ago, you guys were saying this instead.
Yeah. At a time where America was incredibly racist.
Yes, and also had prohibition, so.
Yes, so. That's...
Fun times.
Yeah.
That's well done, America. About.
Yes. Wait to retract your statement after 80 years. Well, yeah, it's fine. You know, if it said it yesterday and then suddenly turned around today and said, no, we didn't mean it like that.
Ah, yeah, but in all fairness, right, we'd still all have the proof on Facebook for that one.
No. I know. Anyway, so Origin of the Species is the most influential academic book of all time. And I can understand why. Mm. It makes sense. To be honest, there's no other book of any real note in the last 500 years that can stand up to it.
Oh, so I think there are some of the ones there that are like come pretty close to the top spot as well. Like you've got Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking.
Yeah.
And The Critique of Pure Reason by Immanuel Kant.
Okay, that one, yes, definitely.
Yeah, that is the one that was, like, second place.
Yeah. A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking, I don't think comes anywhere near Origin of Species or the Kant one. A Brief History of Time was one of those coffee table books. People bought it just to basically look smart.
I think there's actually a scene, going back to Harry Potter, of a wizard actually reading the book whilst stirring a cup of...
What, A Brief History of Time?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the book.
Yes. I'm going to read this while doing magic. While doing magic, because my attention is not on the magic. So that means the magic could go out of control and then you'll end up with a situation where it's like Mickey in Fantasia.
I'm pretty sure it was...
Lots of cups of tea being stirred by spoons. Oh.
I'm pretty sure it was Brief
I was
History of Time.
When you said tried to do the Fantasia reference, I was like...
Ah,
I feel like that's not like that big a disaster, though.
That's true. Yeah, it was definitely a Stephen Hawking book, but he was there stirring a tea with wandless magic, which in the Harry Potter universe isn't a thing.
Yes.
So, yeah, that kind of just, okay, he's reading a book by an influential physicist or scientist, as far as you want to go, whilst doing wandless magic, so...
You know, it's almost like the Harry Potter series is really inconsistent in its own logic.
Oh.
Well, I'm pretty sure I said like the exact same thing in the exact same tone of voice last time I did Literary Lightwing.
Yes.
Well, probably, yes.
Do you know?
Last week, then.
It could be.
No, I think it was like a couple of weeks ago.
No.
It could be that his finger was the wand. But if that's the case...
Does that mean any part of our body could be the wand?
You notice how I just looked at Andrew?
No, no one. We were all thinking it,
No one else was going to say it.
We had
to
wait for Andrew to say it. It was his opportunity, man. that I left that door open wide so you could step through.
Wait, you left your door open wide for him?
Yes, because
well,
I like wizard stuff.
Of course it needs
stuff.
To be wide so that the wizard staff can fit through.
And just think, if it's any kind of thing that you could point, you have 10 of them. Can you imagine being able to cast 10 spells at once?
Double your toes as well, right? Get 20.
Yeah. Oh. No, you can have 21. 22 yeah. If you count your nose, if your nose is long enough.
To be fair though, for me, I'd rather just shoot lightning through my finger, so then I'd just do it 10 times.
Then all you'd need then is like the black robe and the hood.
Yes!
You can be the emperor.
Yes!
You can walk around going, yeah, exactly. You can walk around doing that. You can just walk up to people and go, strike me down with all your hate and your journey to the dark side will be complete.
To be fair, though, how much more awesome Star Wars would have been if the Emperor like fired lightning out of his nose instead?
Oh, God. Can you imagine if he had a cold, though? And he's just sneezing everywhere.
That's actually how the first Death Star blew up.
Is that how he blew Mace Windu out the window because he had a cold?
Yes. New, a force sip. It contains paracetamol and guafenicin. Drink it hot when you have a cold or something.
May the cure be with you.
Yes. Do you know
if Star Wars endorsed products?
Yeah, if Star Wars endorsed. Do you know what I'd love to see in the new Star Wars movies? Because we don't see this, right? We don't see the normal lives of just the people who live in the Empire, and there's no kind of marketing. It's like it's like a heaven. People who do advertising and marketing don't exist in the Star Wars universe. They exist outside of it. They're like the ones controlling it, but they don't exist within the Star Wars universe. So you never see like Empire products or anything like that. You don't see like billboards advertising stuff, which I would imagine
you would see loads of,
wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You know, join the Empire. You too can wear a cool helmet like this.
Our ships are giant triangles.
I was saying, yes. Family Guy do actually do the endorsement for it. So.
Do you see what I mean, though? Yeah. You don't see that in normal movies, and that's something that I feel they should have. How do we get onto this from the origin of species?
Because it was Stephen Hawking.
Oh, God,
see,
yeah.
We know. Yeah, Stephen Hawking, Harry Potter, Star Wars. That was our progression.
Family Guy.
Yeah, we kind of ended on Family Guy
reference in there. Anyway, moving on to the final news story. We can all agree Origin of Species is the most influential academic book. Lost Shelley poem. Execrating rank corruption of ruling class has been made public.
Those are certainly words.
Yes. It's a poetical essay on the existing state of things, and it's a ferocious attack on war and oppression. And it becomes the Bodleian Library's 12 millionth book, which is impressive.
Hmm.
An incendiary lost poem by Percy Bysshe Shelley.
What a cool name that is.
Yeah. In which the young poet attacks the cold advisers and yet colder kings.
Do you think he's got that name because he's a son of a bish?
Yeah. He is a bit bishy from this. He is a bishy, judging by that picture. Anyway. The poet attacks cold advisers of yet colder kings who coolly sharpened misery's sharpest fang, regardless of the poor man's pang, was made public for the first time in more than 200 years. Shelley was 18 and in his first year at Oxford when he wrote his poetical essay on the existing state of things. It's a 172-line poem accompanied by an essay and Shelley's notes, and was written in support of the Irish journalist Peter Finnerty, who had been jailed for libelling the Anglo-Irish politician Viscount Castlereagh. It was printed in 1811 by a stationer on Oxford High Street under the alias of A Gentleman of the University of Oxford. It was only attributed to Shelley 50 years after his death, when copies were already said to be impossible to find. The work was considered lost until it was rediscovered in a private collection in 2006 and has only been viewed by a handful of scholars since. But still, Shelley was from a well-to-do family. For him to be studying at Oxford, he would have been from a well-to-do family at that point. So for him to turn around and start criticizing the establishment I know that.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to criticize the establishment when you've got lots of mummy and daddy's money to fall back on.
Yeah, I know, but also it's kind of one of those things that students do. I mean, he was 18 and at Oxford.
I'm pretty sure I was just trying to impress girls. That's entirely why this essay was written.
Possibly, but the other thing that I would say is, where to go? You know, that's the way to protest. I'd like to see any of the students nowadays do something like this. You know, this is our version of protest. I worked out, right, that there is a correct way to protest now in this country, and people just don't seem to realize it, because everyone thinks that, oh, let's gather 10,000 people in London and march on Parliament, but you can't go near Parliament because there's a law restricting you from going near Parliament. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, is there a way around this? Yes, there is. Instead of getting 10,000 people, you know, all going there, because people really don't want to go to London. You know, somebody who lives in Newcastle is going to look at that and go, yeah, I'd love to go protest, but I can't really afford it. So instead of that, what you do, you find your local MP, find their office, and you get 2,000 people from the local constituency, or as many people as you can from the local constituency. And you do a mass protest outside the MP's office, and you do it for every MP in the country. They do it, their own constituents do it for them on the same day. So every MP's office is getting protested for a specific thing on the same day instead of one mass protest in London. And that way you make it a local protest, and then the message gets across, because you make it clear to your MPs, if you don't do what we tell you, because remember, you work for us, we're going to make your lives a living hell.
Yeah, good work.
Is that just, it's a question of, yeah, just, you're not doing what you're elected to do, what you promised, yeah. So we'll show you how we actually feel.
Yeah. But if you do it on the local level, it actually has more effect.
Well, yeah, because 2,000 people in every single constituency all around the country. You know, that's...
And you could do that because they don't have to travel.
Exactly.
The most it's going to cost them is, a couple of quid on the bus. It's more manageable, less likely to result in rioting.
I mean, I guess the main thing is just, like, getting everyone coordinated.
Oh, yeah, but that's why Andrew likes going. Protesting though, because he loves the riot inside of it.
Yes, I know. I've heard this about you, Andrew. I've heard you're a bit of a rager.
And you would get out one day. All those images, you know, the masked guys with the hoods up and the bandanas across their faces breaking into shops. It was
you
all
the guy
me.
That punched the horse.
No.
That other guy was the fall. The other one was the fall guy. It was you that did it.
It's not my fault. Horse needs to check its privilege. Yes.
That's such a middle class thing to say, but I love it. You, sir, should check your privilege. Bang.
How do you say that in horse language?
Nah.
Nay, sir. Nay.
Oh, right. Okay. So, anyway, I think that was the news.
What was the last story we did?
Yes, that was the Shelley poem, wasn't it?
Yeah, that could have been described as the news. Anyway, we don't have any normal reviews this week, so
because we can't read books.
Yeah, well, we can, because we can talk about the books that we like. So let's do that. So, what book do you want to talk about? Have a think.
Well, I've been reading The Shepherd's Crown.
Yes, I know you have.
Yes, because you're the one who gave it to me.
Yes. How is it so far?
You know, I've been waiting for you to say that, right? Right. So then it takes all the pressure off Rob. Right,
yeah, I could feel the tension building.
No, I know what I'm going to talk about. I was waiting for you guys.
Yeah, it's really good. Probably, like you said on the show, bits do feel a little bit unpolished.
Yeah.
But for the most part, yeah, I'm loving it. More than a McDonald's Happy Meal.
Yes. The effects of chapter two, though.
Yes. The big thing, what happens.
Yeah, which we're still not going to spoil. But the effects of chapter two, I thought it was handled really well, the way that
yeah,
it just
yeah,
cascaded.
Just like kind of ripples across the world.
Yeah. I love the way it cascaded, and then everyone's just kind of going, ooh, yeah.
And all the whoopee cushions in Bonzo's Jugging Bowie let out a mournful lament.
Yes, I know. I was just, oh, that's just genius. Yeah, I love Pratchett.
Yeah, he was a genius.
Yes, he was. Any others from you? Oh, is that the only one you're reading?
Oh, no, I barely have time to read that one.
Right. So, for me, I'm going to go with one that's actually on the shelf over there. And this one's a weird one. Do you guys know David Eddings?
Not personally.
The name rings a bell.
Okay, David Ennings was a very well-known fantasy author, and he wrote a series of books called The Belgariad, which was Pawn of Prophecy, Queen of Sorcery, and various others. I've forgotten.
Did you say the book was called Pawn of Prophecy?
Yes, I know. I found that hilarious when I first read the book as well. Thing is, they were hugely popular during the late 70s, early 80s, and they involved a group of characters who were considered to be sorcerers. Now, in the world, that fantasy world, there were seven gods, but one of them went mad, and there was this magical orb which was on the end of a sword, and you had sorcerers who were basically immortal. They could be killed by normal means. If you cut their head off or stab them through the heart, they'd die. Mm. But they just lived for a long time. Yeah, it wasn't that they were invincible. They just had extremely long lives. And the oldest man in the world was a guy called Belgarath the Sorcerer. And he was 7,000 years old. He had a daughter who was 4,000 years old. And at the end, it kind of touched on the whole idea of immortality when they got to the very end. But there was two main series, the Belgariad and the Malarian. And the whole point of it was there was a descendant of Belgarath who was called Garion, who became Belgarion and became a king. And his job, essentially, was to kill a mad god and replace that mad god with a good one. That was basically the whole point to the story, essentially. But the thing is, they had this choice between light and dark, and you couldn't tell which one was which, and the choice had to be made by somebody who was simply a normal human being who just happened to be from a race that was, you know, that could see the future. At which point I went, how is that normal?
Wait. Are you saying you guys can't see the future?
I'm like, yeah, I can see the future when I'm in a car going for, like, takeout, and I know my future contains a hot meal.
A takeout? Well,
that's fine. We can all see the future just as soon as we read The Pawn of Prophecy. Spoiler alert, the future is sticky.
Oh, God.
Anyway. After that, he did the Raven Codex, and he did two books called Belgarath the Sorcerer and Polgara the Sorceress, which was all about the original sorcerer and his daughter. And the weird thing is, he actually managed to address, in quite a successful way, the whole idea of immortality. He didn't put immortality as this thing that was something wonderful or anything like that. He treated it as something very, very mundane because from these characters' perspective, they could spend years working on a specific project and not realize how many years had gone by because they were in this little corner of the world and they would spend so much time just in that corner. When they go out into the world again, it's just kind of everything has changed. You know, people have developed even more. They'd be like, wow, okay, they managed to do all this by themselves. That's good. I don't need to shepherd them as much these days, so I can get back to what I'm doing. And it was very, very mundane in its approach. And I got from reading it, it suddenly became clear that he'd put a lot of thought into it. You know, people, after a certain point of being immortal, it would just become every day. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah, well, I mean,
it would no longer be special.
We don't think about the fact that we live for, like, a fairly long time.
Yeah. And it just become one of those everyday things. The other thing as well was their limitations on human relationships. They really only had each other. These immortals only really had each other because their lives were so much longer than other people's. So it was essential for them to have their own little corner of the world. Otherwise they'd go mad.
Yeah, just from having to lose all the people you love all the time.
Yeah. And I like the way it approached it. It added a degree of normality to the whole thing. So yeah, that was, it was interesting. It's a very easy fantasy series to get into. It's a very easy series to understand as well. It's very simple in its approach. It's just saying, look, this side is good. This side is bad.
This side,
they're going to have a fight. You know, one of the things that I liked about it was in the Belgariad, which was five books. By the end of it, you have Garion, who, you know, hasn't fully earned the title Bel, which basically is short for beloved Garion. He's still very much a boy, but he has to fight and kill a god.
No pressure then.
Yeah, no pressure. And the thing is,
it beats my assignments.
Yeah, the only people who can help him at that point are his no one can help him when he's fighting. The only people who are there at that point who he has as support are a prince from a certain country who is also a thief and an assassin, and his granddad. He can't take an army with him because loads of people will get killed. You know, he could do that. They could last for several, war could last for several years. He might get there eventually, but loads of people would die. So he basically made the choice to go off on his own and do it.
Yeah, okay, I see the logic there.
Yeah, so it's one of the reasons I like it. There's a lot of logical choices, and it's not heavy, heavy fantasy. It is like loads of fantasy elements in there, but it's not overburdened with them. It keeps things nice and simple, and I like simple. I like straightforward.
Oh, well, that's how we all wound up on the show.
Yes. Anyway, anyone else want to talk about one of their books? Everyone's still thinking.
Clive Cussler. Race the Titanic.
Yeah.
Which, it kind of does bit like give an idea of what people thought before it was actually discovered, because, you know, nobody believed that the ship snapped in two, that it all sank just in one piece. So as the story itself, it works. And it's a nice example of how things change, like how perception of something can change, because there's the belief because no one believed the accounts of the people that were actually there on the night.
Yeah.
So he only had one form of information to go from, because...
You know, so is this a story then, or is this kind of an essay-type piece?
No, the story was that the Titanic was carrying a certain cargo, a certain metal, I think it was called byzanium, and it could have explosive properties once made into a bomb. And so 80s America, you know, thought this substance is on the Titanic, decided, right, well, we're going to race the Titanic to get it. And that the whole reason for the discovery was to get this material.
Okay.
So you got the historical people who think it's right, finding the Titanic, that's going to be a great discovery. And all the while, there's this sort of US military connotation to it. But at some point, Russia gets involved because the material was mined from their country, so they want it back. And it's a really good story. And I think the film actually did it justice as well.
There was a film of it?
Yeah, there was a film version of it in, I think the film version was in the 80s.
Yeah.
And just obviously that would have been before the discovery, and it is a superb film as well.
Okay.
Yeah. But as you also know, I'm a fan of like Stargate Expanded Universe, but I'm just going to leave it at Clive Cussler because I could talk too much about the Expanded Universe.
Yeah, don't get him started on Star Trek, Stargate. Don't get him started on those. We'll be here all day.
Yeah, that's very true.
Jordan doesn't read at all.
No, I do read. Just not massively.
The
like
very hungry caterpillar. He's very hungry.
The caterpillar is very hungry.
Which, make sure you don't spoil the end for him yet, though. He's still working his way through it.
Have you found Spot yet? He did run.
I can't find him. I can't find Wally either.
Yeah, no. Wally's tricky. Wally's like a ninja. Oh, God.
A red and white striped ninja.
Do you guys know that joke? What would happen if Carmen Sandiego and Wally from Where's Wally had a kid? The kid would just be invisible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where the hell is Carmen Sandiego anyway?
I don't know.
Anyway, yes, we're pretty much at the end of the show. So we're going to say farewell to everybody.
Yes. Everybody.
Yes.
Hi, everybody.
Is that including Rupert Murdoch?
Yes.
No.
The Dark Lord. We bid you goodbye.
Oh, that was the second time you said his name.
I know.
No, that was, yeah, that's the second time.
That's the second time.
Yeah. Beetlejuice, we'll say that quickly now. Then. Shield. Right.
Beetlejuice would be quite cool to me.
What happens when his name guy said four times?
Hey?
What happens when his name said four times?
Nobody knows. Nobody says it, because he always appears on the third time.
Yeah. Just wondering if we're going to end up contending with double
Beetlejuice. Leprechaun and Candyman were the same.
What?
You say the name three times and everything.
Yeah, but Candyman had the cool voice.
Yeah. Plus, he can make the sunrise sprinkle it with you.
Oh, you beat me to it.
Anyway, right, we are at the end of the show, so we're going to say goodbye for another week. I have been Rob.
I've been Andrew.
He's been Owen.
And he's been Jordan.
We'll see you all next week.
Rupert Murdoch.